But first, to Lansing, where we've been following a bill that's working its way through the state legislature. This legislation would require people getting welfare benefits to pass a drug test in order to receive those benefits. The substance abuse screening would be required if there is, quote, reasonable suspicion that the person is using illegal drugs. Republican Representative Jeff Farrington sponsored the bill in the House. He says the government should not pay for people's drug habits.
People are tired of applicants getting welfare payments when they're using it for illegal drug use. We want to make sure that they get on the right track, they receive their treatment going forward, and they get on the right path to success.
So supporters of the bill say only people who test positive would have to pay for the cost of the drug test. Critics say suspicion-based drug testing demonizes the poor and hurts children of addicts. Melissa Smith is a senior policy analyst with the Michigan League for Public Policy. She researched the effectiveness of these welfare drug testing programs, and she joins us now from Lansing. Welcome to Stateside, Melissa.
Thank you so much for having me.
So as this bill's been picking up momentum in the state legislature, Melissa, you've analyzed how suspicion-based drug testing is working in the states that have already implemented such programs. So what did your research find?
Well, most interesting is that no one is doing suspicionless drug testing anymore because the courts have kind of thrown the hammer down with Florida, who is the first state to try to implement such a policy since Michigan's attempt in 1999. And there's always been some real question around the suspicionless portion of the drug testing on whether or not it met constitutional muster. And the courts have, while not firmly coming down and saying it absolutely is unconstitutional, and the decision made in the Florida case has basically made most states that were considering such an option scramble to change their drug policy or to change what they wanted to implement to be more in line with what the Constitution would require. So what we're only talking about now when we talk about drug testing for public assistance programs is suspicion-based drug testing. And you'll see that Michigan, when it initially started this legislation, it was a suspicionless bill, and it has gone through a lot of changes and a very, very dramatic change just recently before it passed out of the House. And we saw a lot of things get addressed in this last version of the bill.
What got changed? What were some of the dramatic changes?
Yeah, so one of them was that up until last week when this bill was put in front of the House committee to be passed out, it initially required that both those who test positive and negative would pay for that drug test. And so that has been changed, and now only those that test positive for drugs will be required to pay for that. But the most important change that we see in this bill, and that although I am not a fan of drug testing for government benefits, it is certainly a much, much kinder bill in that it doesn't immediately cut someone off who tests positive for substance abuse.
So what does it do? Give them a chance to seek treatment?
Yes. And it's still really unclear from the bill exactly what is included in that, but it does require that the Department of Human Services refer someone to the regional substance abuse coordinating agencies for the state. And I believe there are 16 in the state that coordinate different types of substance abuse treatment. Now, we do know that in the past, some of these substance abuse treatment agencies have had waiting lists, may not be able to handle an increased capacity or even the capacity of what they have, and they have suffered from some budget cuts.
You wrote a pretty detailed paper looking into these kinds of bills about a year ago. It was called Drug Testing,
yes,
a Solution Looking for a Problem. And one of the points you make is how the state of Michigan has continually defunded substance abuse treatment. So it does seem that that's still a problem.
It is still a problem. There are waiting lists in many areas. There are issues of transportation, especially in the more rural areas. It would be horrible if someone were to be referred to get drug treatment, but then they would lose their benefits simply because they lived in a location where services were not available for them. And then the thing that's so important to remember is that two-thirds of the people that receive government assistance, that receive the program dollars, are children. So whenever we make a decision about a recipient, whenever we say your benefits could be cut, we're not just talking about a parent, we're talking about their children. And there, despite attempts to have an amendment passed that allowed a third-party beneficiary to continue to receive benefits, should someone fail a drug test, that did not pass. So there is no option if for some reason someone lives in an area where they are referred for drug treatment and they can't get into drug treatment, the entire family then loses that benefit amount.
What can you tell us based on the research you've done, based on Michigan's drug testing policy in 99 and also in other states? You looked at Florida, you looked at Indiana, you looked at Arizona. What were the results for all of the effort of doing the testing? What kind of results did they get?
Well, you know, in Florida, for the few months that it did its broad-based drug testing, which meant everyone who applied to get government to get cash assistance in Florida was drug tested, 2% actually tested positive out of 7,000 people that were tested. In Indiana, which did drug testing for work readiness programs, had a 1% tested positive. My favorite is in 2009, Arizona, whose actually was suspicion-based, so it did have a screening. They had 64,000 people screened, 16 people required to take the test, 8 refused, and 1 failed. So one person failed out of 64,000 people.
So what does that tell us?
It tells us that we're throwing a lot of money and energy towards a problem that doesn't exist in the scope that people think it does. It tells us that we're making policy based on stereotypes about poor people and the type of people that are needing to turn to the government in one of the worst economic recessions of our history.
What do you think, based on your research, Melissa, that what other options or ideas are there that would achieve the same outcome? Because when you hear people who say, well, I don't want one of my tax dollars going to support someone who's on drugs, that does seem like a pretty fair thing to not want. But what could be done, in your view, to accomplish that in a way that doesn't demonize the poor or punish children?
Absolutely. And I do want to say that I don't necessarily support that people should be using a bunch of drugs and being allowed to take government dollars.
Sure, sure.
I'm definitely not for that. However, I do understand what it means to live in poverty and what I have a lot of experience with working with people who deal with addiction. And I know that it takes a lot more than just the threat of a drug test or something like that to help people really achieve success. And when we're talking about people that are on cash assistance, it's usually because they don't have any other safety net. They don't have a lot of the bolstering around them to help them get through difficult things, such as dealing with an addiction. So we need to think about if we really want to help people to rise above substance abuse, we need to provide support. We need to make sure, which is why one thing on this latest bill that came through, I'm very, very pleased to see that we're not cutting people off immediately. I just want to make sure the plan's going to work, that we're going to have a good amount of support, that people are not going to get punished simply because they can't access something in their area, and that we have a better plan than before we codify things. Beyond the work that I have done, both the Department of Health and Human Services and George Washington University have done some larger studies on the success of these programs, and their work's even a little more recent than mine. Some of this stuff is just coming out, and they have not found that any of these programs yet have been successful.
What do you think this legislation says about where we are as a state and as a society?
This legislation is not the only one that has been put forward recently in the past year to make it more difficult for people to receive cash assistance or food assistance or some sort of government aid. So I question what it says about our compassion as people and as a government to take care of those that have been hurt the most by the economy and decisions that were made beyond their control. We have the truancy bill. We have the time limits. We have the lottery. We have just again and again and again, which individually these sound like, okay, maybe I can get behind a substance abuse treatment bill, or of course kids should be in school. And individually these are sound ideas. But when we start to step back and see that what we really have is a trend of punitive policies against people who are poor and trying to get help, then we have to ask sort of what role is our government playing? And what kind of role do we want our government to play in helping people to find success to get out of poverty?
Melissa Smith is a senior policy analyst with the Michigan League for Public Policy. She researched the effectiveness of welfare drug testing programs, and she has joined us from Lansing. Melissa, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Stateside has made a repeated request to speak with Representative Jeff Farrington, who sponsored that bill in the State House. His office has not made him available for any interviews.